We're in a teaching series called Come and See. And man, Colafello, that testimony this morning, so powerful. Thank you for sharing. So powerful to hear what God is doing in the lives of our people. And throughout this series, we're talking about a verse from the Bible in Psalm 66, verse 5. And it says this, come and see what God has done, his awesome deeds for mankind. Come and see what God has done. And so what we're doing through this series is, my hope, my prayer is to equip you to be able to say to your friends, to be able to say to your family, to be able to say to the people in your life, come and see what the Lord has done for me. That's what we want to be able to, as we come through this series, grow in confidence and say, come and see what the Lord has done for me. And so the first week that we were talking through in this series, we talked about the idea of our testimony. We said there's power in our testimony. That we even said, that the idea with testimony, we said it's powerful because we can say, if he's done it before, he'll do it again. That if I can share something about what Jesus has done in my life, that I can build, someone else in the room is going to become pregnant with faith that he can do it for them as well. And that's what we started talking about. But this week, I want us to build on this a little bit further. And today, we're going to talk about a different word that comes from this word testimony. And we're going to talk about testify. How do we testify about God's goodness in our lives? How do we bear witness to it? We were just singing that song. That we've been witnesses to God's goodness. Maybe you're a guest here this morning with us and you're still on a journey of faith. You're still questioning whether Jesus is the one who can make a way to save and to heal and to restore. But let me just tell you that we've got a room filled with people this morning who are able to testify to the goodness of God in their lives. That there's so many people in our church, in this room, and in the second service as we gather as well, who will be able to say, man, I've seen God's goodness in my life. I've got a story of God's goodness. But some of us, we can feel nervous about this. I was thinking about another context where I was learning to testify. I don't know whether you guys, if you're unfamiliar, I grew up in the UK. Thanks, Frank. And I think it was like towards the end of primary school, maybe. I did something called a mock trial. It was like, we basically got to go into a courtroom and see what it was like for a trial to run. And so you had all of these learners were there and everyone was given, and over weeks we were preparing for this. So you had like, someone was practicing to be the lawyers. Some people were practicing to be the witnesses. You know, you had these pretend magistrates stood there looking very grumpily at everyone, and like we were in this space practicing. And so my role in this, we were given a fake case and I was a witness. And so I had to memorize all the details of what I was meant to be a witness to. And I remember the level of nervousness I had, because I was there sitting on this stand testifying to something that I couldn't really remember all the details about. I was there and I was like, you know, trying to pretend like I had it all figured out, and I'm sweating as, you know, one of my friends is like, you know, nailing me down to the details. I'm like, I don't know, I can't remember. And I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about how I think for many Christians, that's how we feel when it comes to sharing our faith. And here's why I think we do it. Here's why I think we can become nervous about testifying to the things that God's done in our life. It's because of this thing called recency bias. So if God's done something for you recently, it's easier to tell about the story of what he's done. But if you're in a challenging season in your life, if life's been tough for you over the last, let's say, year, then it's harder to stand up and start testifying about God's goodness. Because you say, well, I haven't seen it recently. Like, we can so easily forget about God's goodness in our life. We can so easily forget that he's come through for me in so many different points. And I think part of it is as Christians, we're not very good at having traditions of remembrance. So I was thinking about in the first part of the Bible, the Old Testament, God instructed his people all of these different ways to remember what God had done for them. So like a couple of examples. The book of Exodus tells the story of God bringing his people out of captivity from slavery, out of Egypt. And so what they did every year was they would have the Passover dinner, and they would sit down and they would eat the same food that they ate on the night of the Passover to remember. And even what they would do, the children, Jesus even, God gives instruction to the children around these dinner tables. And they would have to ask the question every Passover, what's this ceremony? What does this ceremony mean? And so that the adults could then tell the story of God's goodness in their lives. You see things like the Feast of the Tabernacle, where the people of God would go out, make a tent, and live in this tent structure for 7 days to remember what God did to bring the people of God out of Egypt. They had so many different holy days and different things to remember what God had done. They would name cities after things that God had done, or they would build altars to remember what God had done. And so there were so many reference points for the miracles that God had done in their life that even if they weren't in a season where they were experiencing or feeling God's goodness, they could point back to so many different ways to prove his goodness. And so I was like, man, it'd be so great if we had some of those in our tradition of faith. And then I remembered something that we actually do. So let's go to Matthew 26, where Jesus instructs us one of the ways we can remember what he's done for us. Matthew 26 says, while they were eating, Jesus took bread, and when he'd given thanks, he broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, take and eat. This is my body. Then he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. Let me read another place. You're not going to have it on the screens, but I want to read to you from 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 23 to 26. It says, for I received from the Lord what I also passed on to you. The Lord Jesus, on the night he was betrayed, took bread. And when he'd given thanks, he broke it and said, this is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. In the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me. And this is the key verse. For whenever you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. So we do actually have a tradition of remembrance in our faith. I guess my question is this. In your home, around your dinner table, when was the last time you took communion as a family? And the reason I ask that is because we don't regularly. Because I don't think we've done a great job in certain parts of the Christian faith, in Christian traditions, of building this into the fabric of who we are. And here's the interesting thing. Or a couple of things. Why am I sharing this in the context of testifying? The first reason I want to share it in that context is that last verse we just read. That there's something powerful that happens that when we take communion, we are proclaiming the death of Jesus until the day he comes. In other words, it is a key part of our proclamation to the world that Jesus is alive. That he died for us and that he's risen. That when we take communion, it does something in us, and it spiritually, it does something in us, it does something in the atmosphere, it transforms something around us that causes us to be proclaimers of the gospel. But there's also another interesting thing I was thinking about. When the disciples took communion, they did it at dinner tables where they would be in conversation with each other, considering what the Lord had done for them. And so as a part of equipping us as a church to be able to testify about God's goodness, I'm going to set us a challenge as a church this week. I want to invite every person who considers Freedom Church their church to join us on this adventure. That for the next 7 days, Every day, I want to encourage you in your home to take communion as a family. If you're by yourself, but maybe gather friends around you, that you're going to take communion. And as you do it, either before or after you take communion, I want to encourage you to ask two questions and discuss them, talk about them. The first question is this: what's the Lord done for you? What's the Lord done for you? And then just talk about it. Maybe it was something recent, but again, we can have recency bias. The point of these traditions of faith was that they looked way back through their history and said, look what the Lord has done for us. And so in your life, what's the Lord done for you? Where did he save you from? Where did he bring you out of? What were the points at which the Lord saved you from some things you didn't even know he was saving you from? Because he led you in this direction instead of going into a dangerous place. What's the Lord done for you? Because we know ultimately what he did for us was on the cross. But the death and resurrection of Jesus was just the beginning of our faith. It's the end of our faith as well. But we've got this whole chunk in the middle that we are living out the realities of our salvation. And he continues to move in our lives. So what's the Lord done for you? What can you testify to? And talk about it as a family. And the second question is this: what's the Lord done for you here? What do I mean by here? In our church. What's he done for you here? Talk about it. Talk as a family. Talk as friends. When you gather together this week, the next 7 days, talk about what's the Lord done for you here. Because if we've been praying, we were talking about how we're building up towards a Sunday, the 21st of September, where we want to invite our world to church. We think it's one of the best times of year to bring people through when the sun starts to come out and everyone starts to feel a little bit happier. We start to go on this journey of believing and praying for God to come and move in power. Can I just tell you guys, it's not the second time yet. You guys can go away. I'm not ready for it. They're trying to play me out like the Oscars. Brenton, it's lovely to see you. You can sit down. I'll call you up. That was great though. Thanks, team. That was a practice run. I was like considering just letting them be there, but I was like, no, you're going to be here for a while. You're going to be here for a while. What's the Lord done for you here? I've seen God do some miracles here. I don't know about you. I've seen miracles happen here. I've seen God move in our church. And if you are going to be stirred to say, we are going to invite people to this church, not because you're like, hey, come to our church, we give you a free coffee. No one cares. They want to hear what's the Lord done for you? What's the Lord done for you? And so we are going to take communion together. And I want to encourage you every day this week. Because here's what's going to happen. As you learn to testify in your family, you're going to have the courage to testify outside of that place. And we're going to have something that's going to overflow out of our homes and out of this home that we gather together on Sundays. And it's going to go out into the world around us. And so I want to encourage you, we are going to be a people these next 7 days. And maybe after that, you might do it once a week. But for the next 7 days, let's take communion together as family. Sat around dinner tables. If you're with friends, sit around. If you're in a restaurant, sneak in some bread. Like, let's gather together and testify to each other about God's goodness in our lives. So why do we want to do this? Why are we testifying about the goodness of Jesus? I was reminded of some verses in Matthew chapter 9. Matthew chapter 9, verse 35 to 38. And it says this: Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless. I think that sounds a little bit like our city at times. I see a lot of people around our lives that seem harassed and helpless. And some of those people have good incomes and ambition in business or career. But in their spirit, in their soul, they're feeling harassed and helpless for a lack of purpose. Like, there's people across our city who are feeling this way, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." Jesus sees the need of the people. It's much like Exodus 3 that we were just talking about, this Exodus. that where God's people come out of Egypt, and Moses is at the burning bush, and he's talking to God, and God says, I've heard the cries of my people, so I'm sending you. Because here's the interesting thing that then happens. Jesus sees the needs of the people harassed and helpless. And he says, the harvest is plentiful. Ask the Lord of the harvest. It's like, great, okay. What do we do? The very next verse, let's go on to Matthew chapter 10 and verse 1. Says, Jesus called his 12 disciples to him and gave them authority to go. So the very next verse, it goes from harassed and helpless, ask the Lord of the harvest, and then I'm sending you to go. And then a few verses later in Matthew 10 verse 5, these 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions. And then he shares a whole bunch of different things with them. One of the things that I love is Meg and I recently, we started watching this series, The Chosen. Some of you might be familiar with it. And it's a series talking about Jesus' life, the disciples. Much of it is fictional, so you can't kind of take it as the Bible. But it helps you to kind of place yourself and imagine a little bit maybe the disciples' journey. And just helps paint a picture of what it could have been like. And one of the things I love that Jesus gathers in The Chosen, he gathers the 12 disciples. And then he says, okay, go. Go and heal the sick. Go and cast out demons. Go and teach. And you can see on their faces like, but Jesus, you're the preacher. What are we talking about? Because all they've seen up to this point is Jesus. Like we even saw it in the previous verses in Matthew 9, that Jesus is going around healing the sick. He's doing all of that stuff. And then Jesus gathers the 12 and says, now you go. And they're like, but you're the one. What? Like, hold on. Even in the context of the series, they say, well, what would we say? What are we going to say to them? We don't know. We don't know what to say. And Jesus just gives them authority to go. I think that's how many of us feel when we sit in a teaching series like this, and I'm like, go and talk to your friends about Jesus. And you're like, what? You're the preacher. And I want to bring us back to the idea, a key idea of this series. Is the key idea of this series is that you're the preacher. What's your message? And we'll just bring that up. I want us to reflect on that idea. You're the preacher. What's your message? I every Sunday when I get the privilege to be able to stand on this stage, I hope I'm prepared to be able to bring a message to you. That I've prayed over, that I've sensed God has been speaking to me about, that I've sensed that as I'm studying the Word of God, that He's speaking, He's saying something. So when I stand on this stage and I preach the Word of God, that I'm teaching from the Bible, my hope is that I've got a message for you. I don't want to just stand on this stage and say, hey guys, so anyone got anything from their Bible studies this week that you just help me out here? Like, I hope that I've got a message for you. And yet many of us, when we think about going into our lives and sharing a message of hope with our friends, we don't actually know what message we're going to bring. We'll go into, and so I'll say to you, hey, why don't you know, we're believing to impact more people with the love of God. We're believing to take a message of hope. We're believing on the 21st of Feb that we're going to fill this room out twice over and see God move in power. And we all go, yeah, high five each other. Let's go. This is exciting. And then if I had to ask you, then I say, so when you talk to your friends, what's the message? You're the preacher. What's the message? You say, oh, I mean, you know, like, we got free coffee and it's a nice community. People don't care about that. Like, ultimately, I want us to be a place of community where people can experience God together. I want people to, but there's a lot of places that community happens in Cape Town. Like, you can join a running club or you can do something else. Or like, there's a lot of places that people can have community. So you can't sell this place on community. You can't just share this from a place of come and get something free. People don't. What they want is an experience of the living God. And so if you're the preacher, what's your message? And here's the thing, like sometimes, like you want to stand up and be able to tell people when you're preaching, hey, here's what you should say. But the truth is, you have the Spirit of God living in you, and you're a preacher. I don't know if you knew that until you came to church today. Congratulations. You're a preacher. Why? Because you've been a witness to some things. You've been a witness to what God has done in your life. And through, like, I've had the privilege of being able to be a part of this church for 23 years. And let me tell you, I've been a witness to some things. I was thinking as I was preparing for today, I was thinking about tens, like literally tens of women in our church over the last 23 years that I know of, who doctors have said could not have children, who have had babies, that God has supernaturally healed. And you gave it a golf clap because you don't know how big a miracle it was in their life. But God healed some people. Because he's a miracle worker. And I've seen those things happen. I've seen people that doctors said, it's impossible. And I've been in the room when they've come and told us that they're having a baby. I remember there was a family in our church a number of years ago who I got to be a part of a prayer team for, because they went for a scan and they were told that the baby had half a heart and one lung. And they went for this scan and they said that the doctor's recommendation was to abort the baby. But this couple were a couple of faith. They said, we believe in a God who is a healer. We believe in a God who is still able to heal. And so this baby was born. And I remember we were getting these messages. I remember sitting around my parents' dining table and we got a message. The baby was about 5 days old and they said, it's not looking good. It's going south quickly. And so we prayed. And we prayed for 30 minutes and we're all on our knees around this table and we're just praying and seeking God. And we get a message 25, 30 minutes later saying, it's amazing, the baby's doing just fine. And we went on this fight over a number of weeks where the baby was going up and down, up and down. And now, let me tell you, that young boy is about 15, 16 years old and is doing amazingly well. I've seen people in our church who have been set free, delivered from demonic spirits, where Jesus has set people free from oppression. I've seen people in our church on very high incomes who seem to have it all in life but did not have the meaning to life. And I've seen them discover the meaning of life, find purpose and hope, and fully give their lives to Jesus. When the world said they had everything, they said, I don't have everything, I'm still looking, and they found Jesus and their lives have been transformed. I've seen God do things in my life. I'm a witness to some things. And so I've got a message of what God has done. I can testify. So my question again, you're the preacher, what's your message? What's he done for you? What's he done for you here? Because there's amazing things I've seen there, but the most powerful stuff is when I can talk about what he's done for me. He's done so many miracles in my life. I've seen him move in power. I've seen him do miracles. And so you're the preacher, what's your message? It's a very simple sermon today, but I want to equip you. I want to equip you because I don't want you to miss out on the fact that you've got a responsibility as a believer. Yeah, right. This is not just something that you can give to others. This is actually for every person who believes in Jesus, that we have been given a responsibility. And so how do we testify then? How do we testify to what God has done? How do we share about what God has done? Well, I want to bring you back to the two same questions that we asked and we're going to ask when we sit around communion table together over this week. And the first question again is this, and I will invite the team to come and join me on the stage. They're all going to be too nervous now. What's the Lord done for you? As you share with others, what's your message? Here's how you shape your message. Just think, what's the Lord done for you? What's he done? What's the ways in which He's moved. Because, and maybe you're going to have a different message for different people. If you've got a friend who's been around church before, but hasn't for a long time, then share a message that's going to connect with them. Because God's done some things in your life that's going to minister to people who are now unchurched or de-churched. They've been far from God for some time. Maybe you've got a message of hope that is going to speak to people who've never been in church before. They've never connected into a church. What's the Lord done for you? Here's what you do. Tell them. Just let them know. Just talk to them. It doesn't need to be a weird thing. You just tell the stories of the God activities in your life. They're sharing about some difficulties going on. Say, hey, let me just tell you what. You know I go to church, right? Yeah. Let me tell you what God's done. I was in a similar situation. I just want to tell you what I experienced God do for me in that moment of my life. So, and I think he can do the same for you too. And the follow-up question then is, what's the Lord done for you here? Because the Lord's done some things for you here. And I'm assuming out of the love, again, Jesus was moved with compassion. This only works if you have compassion for people around you. If you're just dialed in on your life, trying to live your life, it may not work. But if you start to pray, you start to testify to the stories of God's goodness in your life, and you're talking with your family, or you're talking with your friends, or a community group, or your serve teams, or whoever it is, you just start talking about these things, you're going to start to think about people in your life who need something similar to you. Don't be like me when I'm stood there nervously trying to make it up as I go along, because the truth is, you have been a witness. You don't need to make anything up. You don't need to pretend. If you've experienced the living God, there is nothing like it in the world. There's nothing like it. People will search their whole lives for what you've experienced. The greatest riches on earth could not compare to what you've experienced. So what's the Lord done for you here? What's he done in the context of the church? Because let me tell you, there are people in your life and they need it. Because they may not show it on the outside, but they are harassed and helpless without Jesus. Without connection to the living God, we cannot be satisfied. And I have witnessed that. And I've witnessed people try and find hope and life and meaning and purpose without Jesus. And maybe they feel like they've seen it for a season and they have a sugar rush when they get a new job, or they're in a new relationship, or they're experiencing, it's like a sugar rush. They're like, now I've got it. Now I've got this new hobby and this is it. I've found it. This is my purpose. But it's a sugar rush because the crash is coming. It doesn't work without an eternal Savior who will step in to the middle of our and bring a wholeness and a lightness and a healing and a forgiveness and a restoration. And let me tell you, church, we've got to get a little bit more confidence about the message we have, I think. I think some of us, because of the cultures and society that we live in today, we try and placate. We can try and make it seem a little bit more reasonable. We don't want to offend anyone. Yeah, every way goes to God. We can try and make it a little bit more easy to digest. But the truth is, there is one way to God. There is only one way, and his name is Jesus. You will not find hope in any other place. You will not find peace. You will not find what you need for your soul in any other place but the person of Jesus. And we need to be confident in the message we've received, in what we've witnessed. Because I've seen it. I think many of you have seen it as well. You're the preacher. What's your message? Pray into it. As you go on this next week, these next 7 days, testifying to your friends, to your family, what you've seen, allow it to hone in your message. Say, this is my message. This is what God's done for me. This is the hope that I've received. Maybe it's big, maybe it feels small. Testify about the goodness of God. Because I've witnessed it. And I want you to as well.